chapter 3, text 12. Help us when we visit it. Ishtan bhogan vipodeva dasyante yajya bhavita tayar gatan apratayayi pyo yo bhunte stena eva saha. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna sacrifice, supply all necessities to man. But he who enjoys these gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Verse 4. The demigods are authorized supplying agents on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different kinds of yajnas prescribed for different kinds of demigods, but all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice of the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yajnas are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis, namely according to different qualities. For example, meat eaters are recommended to worship the goddess Kali, the ghastly form of material nature. And before the goddess, the sacrifice of animals is recommended. But for those who are in the mode of goodness, the transcendental worship of Vishnu is recommended. But ultimately, all yajnas are meant for gradual promotion to the transcendental position. For ordinary men, at least five yajnas, known as the Panchamahayajnas, are necessary. One should know, however, that all the necessities of life that the human being requires are supplied by the demigod agents of the Lord. No one can manufacture anything. Take, for example, all the eatables of human society. These eatables include grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, sugar, etc. for the persons in the mode of goodness, and also eatables for the non-vegetarians like meats, etc., none of which can be manufactured by men. Then again, take, for example, heat, light, water, air, etc., which are also necessities of life. None of them can be manufactured by the human society. Without the Supreme Lord, there can be no profuse sunlight, moonlight, rainfall, breeze, etc., without which no one can live. Obviously, our life is dependent on supplies from the Lord. Even for our manufacturing enterprises, we require so many raw materials like metal, sulfur, mercury, manganese, and so many essentials, all of which are supplied by the Lord's agents with the purpose that we should make proper use of them, to keep ourselves fit and healthy for the purpose of self-realization, leading to the ultimate goal of life, liberation from material struggle for existence. This aim of life is attained by performance of the yajnas. If we forget human life's purpose and simply take supplies from the Lord's agents for sense gratification, becoming more and more entangled in material existence, which is not creation's purpose, certainly we become thieves, and therefore we are punished by material nature's laws. A society of thieves can never be happy because they have no aim in life. The gross materialistic thieves have no ultimate goal of life. They're simply directed to sense gratification, nor do they have knowledge of how to perform yajnas. Lord Chaitanya, however, inaugurated the easiest performance of yajna, namely the Sankirtan yajna, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada is so focused on his missionary work, he's need to be so much in that mode of persuading people, convincing people to actually do this, take up Krishna consciousness. Great creature. So this verse, Ishtan Bhogan Vipo Deva Dasyante Yajna Bhavita. The devas, the gods, small g, being Yajna Bhavita, propitiated, satisfied, by sacrifice, dasyante will give vo unto you, vosotros, same word, will give to you ishtan bhogan, the desire or required bhogas. Now bhoga, of course, we have this kind of jargon, or Vaishnava jargon, where bhoga means unoffered food and prasada means offered food. And here by bhoga, Krishna means, well, Prabhupada translates necessities of life. Because bhoga means just, yeah, foods or just things you need. So Ishtan, desire, the desire. There's actually a play on words here. It's very clever in the Sanskrit that you can't get in English, so I'll explain it. And that is, in Sanskrit, you make a past passive participle by adding ta to infinitive, for example. Kri means to do, kar, malvar, and then kripta means done or made. Or, for example, drish is the verb to see, so drishta means seen. So, for the word yajna, yajna, if you want to pronounce it exactly as written, yajna, has an irregular past participle, which is ishta, because it's e. Anyway, I won't go into all the grammar. Later I can explain if anyone's interested in exactly how it's formed, but for my fellow grammar lovers. But ishta means sacrifice, but it also is the past participle of the verb ish, which means to desire, like ichati, ish, he or she, or it desires. So therefore, ishta, ishtan bhogan, means the desire or required bhogas, but it also means the bhogas which have been offered sacrifice. It's actually a bhoga. That's the word Krishna uses. So ishtan bhogan bodeva dasyante, so the gods will give to you these desired bhogas, or required bhogas, they being bhavita, satisfied by sacrifice. Even the word satisfied is interesting, because bhavita, from the verb bhu, to be, literally means made to be, in the sense of, bhava, the word bhava literally means a state of existence, state of being, from the verb to be. And so it can be an emotional state of being, not merely a physical state of being, but also an emotional state. That word bhava comes to mean like an emotion, like he's involved. So, you know what we're talking about. So bhavita means like bhavt, like someone has been made, like placed into a state of being, in the state of sort of like a sense, or the state of satisfaction, a state of well-being. So it's here the yajna bhavita. Anyway, tire the dan apradai yajyo yo bhunte stena eva saha. So yo bhunte. Now again, there's all kinds of things in Sanskrit here. A lot of times in the Gita, the Sanskrit composition is like super tight. It's like a very tight argument, and then it doesn't come out in English. Because Krishna says, yo bhunte, one who enjoys. But bhunte is the verb from bhoga. So it's the same word, really. There's one who enjoys the enjoyments. So yo bhunte, in life, one who enjoys. One who enjoys tire the dan, the things given, those bhogas given by them. Tire means by them. The dan, given. Datta is given, like Deva Datta, God given. So one who enjoys the bhogas given by them, by the demigods, upadayyayyo, not offering back to them. Upadayya da, same as Spanish da. Upradhyayyo, not offering back to them, one who enjoys these bhogas, stena eva saha, is nothing but thief. Now, there's an interesting point here because you could say there's a paradoxical attitude toward the demigods. For example, here in chapter 3, Krishna's saying that you're nothing but a thief if you don't offer back to them what they've offered to you. And then he'll eventually describe this as a pravartitam chakram. Your wheel has been made to turn, a cycle, where you're receiving and offering back. Then again, Krishna will say later in the Bhagavad Gita that Jayanya Devatava, that those devoted to other gods are really worshiping me alone, but they're irregularly. And Krishna will say that this whole process of the Trayi Dharma, of offering the Vedic rituals, actually is futile as you go to heaven and come back. So what is going on? What is Krishna's ultimate conclusion about the demigods? There's in the Bhagavad Gita, it seems that Krishna is describing by sort of a certain piety. Also, Prabhupada says those with goodness worship Krishna. And that's true. It's also true that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yajante Sattvika Devan, those in the mode of goodness sacrifice to the gods. Yajante Sattvika Devan. So, I think the best way to understand this is, actually late night programs and early morning classes as a tremendous cure for insomnia. The best way to understand this is, because we see, say in Mahabharata, even the Prabhupada says it all certain things, that offering these sacrifices is something like paying your utility bills back then. Although Krishna stopped the Indra Yajna. The Indra Yajna in Vrindavan said, no, you just do it all here. So, but worshiping the dead, or again, the word worship is misleading because that's not the Sanskrit word. The Sanskrit word that's in play here is yaj, to sacrifice, which really just means paying your utility bills. That's what it was being talked to. Krishna's not talking here about loving the demigods. He's not talking about taking shelter of them. And then verse 7, I'm on for the yaja. What Krishna's saying is, come to me alone for shelter. Krishna's not actually saying that, you know, don't do your other, all your dharma, because in fact he's urging Arjuna to do his dharma. But it's the idea of shelter. We don't, to offer a yajna is something like, you know, writing a check to the light company or the water company. Of course, nowadays I guess people do, what is it, like by computer, you know, online, automatic deductions or payments or whatever. But it's just paying your utility bill. And when Krishna stopped the Indra Puja, he wanted to make the point that you don't really, if you're, now that was something with the residents of Vrindavan. Because keep in mind, the residents of Vrindavan are very special people. They're the greatest devotees of Krishna. So they don't have to pay utility bills because they're so close to Krishna. But for ordinary people, even for ordinary devotees who are not on the highest platform, it is healthy to acknowledge that some other devotees, maybe the demigods, are sending us things. So, of course, we don't offer sacrifice to demigods, and probably didn't ask us to do that. I'm not about to initiate that. However, there, in a culture in which that worship was going on, I mean, and the worship, I keep saying worship, but I don't want to say sacrifice, because worship is so misleading. Because even the word puja doesn't really always mean worship. Even if you look at Prabhupada's translation of it, often, in a sense, the most basic meaning of puja is to honor. So, for example, as in English, we would say, honor your father and mother. In Sanskrit, they would say, like, pooj, your father and mother. Don't purge them. But. So, it's really like that. For example, in India, in Hindi, probably another language, there's a lot of languages in India, when people, and then people write letters to their father, they'd say, like, puja pitaji, puja, means like, you would say worshipful, but that's what it just means, like, honorable father. So it really means, like, to honor. Now, the son, I mean, Vivaswan, is a devotee. Krishna taught the Bhagavad Gita to Vivaswan. Imam Vivaswate Yoga, chapter 4. So, Surya, or Vivaswan, or Indra, they're all devotees of Krishna. And they're saying all these things, that's their devotional service. They supply us all these things. And so, even in, let's say, earlier Vedic culture, where devotees did offer back to these demigods, it was in that spirit, that they're devotees, and this is their service, this is what they're offering. And if I'm engaged in Krishna service, they're offering these things to help me in my service. All of us, you know, we need a little sunshine in our lives. Good day, sunshine. So we all need a little sunshine in our lives. And so there's some gratitude that all these gods of nature, they're just devotees. sending us different things for our service. So you make an offering to them in that spirit of gratitude and appreciation for their devotional service. So we can see how there is a certain state of consciousness in which this is very much compatible. However, when Krishna says, Jeevyanya Devata Makta, it's actually different. He's there, he's saying, not those who simply offer sacrifice or just pay their utility bills to the gods, but he's saying those devoted to other gods. That's a different thing. So what Krishna reserves exclusively for himself in the Gita is devotion, that you should be devoted to me, and shelter, you should come to me alone for shelter. Those are the things that Krishna reserves for himself. And however, like I said, just paying the light bill, the water bill, there's consistency here, all these statements Krishna makes about our relationship to demigods, all these statements are ultimately consistent. Any questions on these points? No?
So, it can be beneficial for a spiritual life to ask for blessings or prayers, to offer prayers to various demigods?
Well, even Rukmini went to the temple of goddess, went to where Krishna kidnapped her, took her away at her request. And the gopis would pray to Lord Shiva to get Krishna as their husband. So, you'd say in principle, you could. I tend to think that in this age where our minds so easily go off the road, we sort of have these, our heads sort of these bent axles, and it's so easy to go off the road, that I wouldn't want to formally create in my own life or the life of someone else, like a process like that. I think on an informal basis, if you see the sun shining, you always offer your respects and gratitude to the sun or it rains, just sort of natural, informal expressions of gratitude, rather than like start to include it in our sadhana. It can just be like your attitude toward nature and toward the devotees who govern nature. So, anything else?
It's pretty much the same question.
Maharaj, so you were saying just because of the day and age, I heard about this, that Rupa Goswami recommends taking blessings of Ganeshji to get rid of obstacles some places, but then some devotees asked Prabhupada if they could worship Ganesh, and Prabhupada said something like, send me $10,000 every month and it's okay, or something like that.
Those are interesting stories. I'm not sure if they're true stories.
Right.
That's my tricky dick mudra. So... yeah, I mean, unless you can find those stories somewhere documented. As far as Ganesh, of course we offer our respects to Ganesh. At the same time, he's not at all prominent in the Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we should keep things in proportion as we find them in the Bhagavatam. Because Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the Bhagavatam is sub siddhanta, has all the philosophical conclusions. So yeah, I think we should just follow the Bhagavatam. And of course offer respect to Ganesh, no question of disrespecting. But at the same time, yeah, do it the Bhagavatam way. Of course, if you want to send me $10,000 a month.
Yeah. actually pronounced Yeshia.
There are different regional pronunciations and different, in general, Sanskrit runs very phonetically, and JN seems to be one exception. I don't know whether it was all, like, for example, JN is often pronounced GY, as in Gyan, or Yagya. And then, East India, like West Bengal, they tend to pronounce Y like J, like Jaha or Prasadivaya. Mm-hmm. And they tend to pronounce a Y, they tend hardly to pronounce, but pronounce very faintly a Y following another consonant. So that Yagya becomes Joko. Because, again, it's the Y becomes a J, Joko. And even if you see like someone really talking about Jugga, like that's a real Jugga or something. Because the Y becomes a J, the first Y becomes a J, initial Y becomes a J, but the Y following a consonant is not pronounced very much. But you can see, because you tend to pronounce it a Y like a J, then you couldn't say Jugga. So it becomes like Joko. And then some people in India pronounce it Yagna because they sort of keep it, they sort of go halfway. It's like Yagya, then they pronounce the N again, it becomes Yagna. And there's all kinds of things. In India, because it's, people pronounce it many different ways, so phonetically it'd just be Yajna. Or following sort of the modern Indic tendency to pronounce it as G-Y, Yagya, East India, Jungle. So I guess it's sort of your choice. But in the word, and it's funny because among scholars, Sanskrit scholars, they're like phonetic purists, so they'll say Jnana. And you can see why. I mean, Jnana is just something a little unappealing about that pronunciation. For Jnana, Jnana, I don't think anyone in India says it. And they even write it as an Indian when they write the word G-Y-A-N, Jnana, isn't it?
There is also one more pronunciation prominent in like West and South, Jnan.
Jnan.
D very silent, like very soft, but Jnan.
Yeah, it's almost like N-Y.
Okay, Yajnia, Yajnia.
Yeah.
Is this something we were taught in school to say Yajnia? Yajnia?
Yeah.
To say Yajnia.
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 Well, then what they're doing is they're making it, what they're doing is pronouncing J like a Y and inverting the J and N, so the N first and then the...
And there is a D somewhere in that.
Yajna.
Yajna. Knyan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, again, quite creative, but it's almost like seeing the N, like almost like Spanish N, like, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mañana. So you can see the people in India struggled with this JN thing. Yes.
Not really just extending on your point, doesn't the Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita always clarify all points though in reference to demigod worship versus that? Isn't the Devarshi Pitasa the mountain?
That's the Bhagavatam, yeah.
Yeah.
The Kinkaranayas or Nija Rajan.
Right.
But that verse says, Sarvatmana Jakshanam, one who has completely taken shelter of Krishna.
Exactly.
Like the Raja Jana, the residents of Vrindavan. So most devotees are practicing. The idea is that one is a pure devotee, if one is completely, or if one is like completely engaged in Krishna service.
Right.
Now, let's say someone is a devotee, but not that strict and engaged in some material activities, like now they're having Vaishnava golf tournaments and all that stuff. Not that, just a handful of devotees who participate, but I mean, a lot of time people get into these somewhat loose lifestyles. So that's the idea. If you say, I don't recognize any demigods because I'm a devotee, but then I'm materialistic in different ways, it's kind of like taking it both ways. Therefore, that verse says that one has no debt to the gods, forefathers, etc. If one has completely taken shelter of Krishna, saranam, one's whole soul, if all one's soul, if one has taken shelter of Krishna, that means a strict, very devoted person. Does this mean anyone who is in the Hare Krishna movement or is a member of ISKCON or some other Vaishnava organization? It means very serious devotee.
Yeah, somebody asked that question to Prabhupada some time ago too. It was a very staunch clarification about fully surrendered, as they say.
Yeah.
Some devotees just misunderstand fully, I guess, and that's why when he made these points before, it was, you know, some people read scripture and they even interpret it loosely, so, you know. So.
Well, there's the idea that never in your life you lived in a Hare Krishna temple and follow the principles the rest of your life, no matter what you're doing. First of all, you're a priest, you have a right to collect money from the public. And also, you're sort of on the same level as anyone else, because... I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, there's a grain of truth in it, but not a whole loaf of bread. The grain of truth is that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, neha vikrama nasya, see, there's no loss of diminution, so in a sense, whatever was your high watermark, that's kind of, you sort of get credit for having gone there, and eventually you'll be back there. So, we'll stop here. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Please, Krishna.